Get started. So, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to this session where we're going to take a high-level look at SQL Azure, Microsoft's relational database for the cloud and the Windows Azure platform. So in this session today, what I hope to be able to show you is how we've taken, you know, a lot of the same great features, the great capabilities that are available in SQL Server today on-premises, and make those available to you in the cloud with SQL Azure. Also, what we'll see, though, is that SQL Azure is more than just the same capabilities in the cloud. It's really a higher-level platform as a service that has new capabilities, is easier to manage, easier to maintain, and very flexible in terms of the scale-out and elasticity of provisioning databases and applications. My name is Mark Skirrell. I'm a lead program manager at Microsoft in Redmond. The team I work on is a cloud services team, and our overall team, we own a number of the data platform services for Windows Azure. So our team owns SQL Azure database itself and produced, you know, the V1 and the subsequent versions of SQL Azure. We also own reporting services, we're producing that. Windows Azure Data Market, if you've heard of that. And then my team in particular is working on, hard at work on Data Sync, SQL Azure Data Sync. And we'll briefly cover that together with reporting at the end of this session. So before I actually dive into SQL Azure and the SQL Azure database, what I thought I should do is, if you like, level set on some of the terminology and the various levels of services that we offer on the Windows Azure platform. I have a few slides on that. And then go into the database itself. We'll start off by having a look at the administration experience, provisioning experience, and then move into developing applications and how application development differs or actually is very, very similar with SQL Azure as it is with SQL Server. And then we can look at some of the future services coming online, so reporting and data sync in particular. I'll provide a quick overview for those. And then a roadmap. You know, I think one of the great things about the cloud services and SQL Azure database is that it's not like a box product and we're revving it every, you know, 2 years, 3 years, or something like that. SQL Azure has been, the database has actually been available almost a year and a half now. And probably since we released it, we've released service updates every 3 or 4 months in that year and a half. So some of these new features and capabilities that we'll go through will be coming available over the next year or so. So actually, I missed at the very start. I was just going to do a quick poll. So how many of you guys have actually been involved in a project and deployed an application, running an application in production on the Windows Azure platform? Anyone? So we've got a few there. Okay, that's good. And then how many of you, help me set the level here, how many of you have actually played with any of the bits, played with the platform, got one of the free subscriptions, that sort of thing? Okay, so a few more. But a number of people, this is brand new. There's my poll. So I wanted to start off with a terminology, and you sometimes hear this terminology, and I just wanted to make sure everyone was aware of the various services that we offer with the cloud and the various levels at which those services are and the various capabilities. So at the most sort of basic level, when we talk about the cloud and cloud services, there's infrastructure. That's the hardware, the servers, the networking, and so on, and offering that as a service. So rather than buying your own hardware, deploying it, getting the rack space for it, deploying the OS and so on there, configuring the network, you're using someone else's data center, someone else's hardware, the servers and the network. And that really gives you that basic infrastructure as a service. And that has a number of benefits. I mean, you don't have to, the cost of entry, you don't have to buy the servers. If you need more capacity, you can simply very quickly buy that more capacity and reduces your administration overhead and tasks. But a lot of Windows Azure platform, it's, as the name suggests, it's all about platform and providing higher level capabilities, not just the infrastructure, not just running the same software in VMs in the cloud. So I think, you know, SQL Server compared to SQL Azure, SQL Azure is a great example of platform as a service. There's a number of things that you simply just don't have to worry about with SQL Azure. You don't have to worry about, you know, backing up your transaction logs. You don't have to worry about the high availability. It has great capabilities for scaling out and very quickly deploying, creating new databases, tens, hundreds of new databases, you know, locally in your region or on the other side of the world in one of the other data centers. So really providing that higher level platform as a service. And then finally, the software as a service. So Office 365, you know, would be a great example of that. Software that we're providing to directly to end users that will sit on top of either platform as a service or infrastructure as a service. So really, the Windows Azure platform there provides both infrastructure and the higher level platform services. And then, you know, you guys can go out and write the applications that sit on top of that platform. And then there's also things like Office 365 as well, providing that software as a service. So the Windows Azure platform, you know, we've tried to make it as flexible as possible regarding programming languages, regarding tools, and regarding capabilities. So you can use .NET, you can use C# and VB to write your applications for the Windows Azure platform, or you can use Java or PHP as well. You can use Visual Studio or Eclipse. You know, you've got a lot of flexibility there on how you write your applications that can be deployed to the Windows Azure platform. And in terms of the capabilities, there's a number of capabilities, some of them core capabilities and some of them the higher level capabilities. So obviously compute, storage, management, all core capabilities that you're going to need for an application. But then there's a number of higher level capabilities, so the content caching, queuing, access control services, the data marketplace is a new innovative service that we've released on the Windows Azure platform, being able to subscribe to and get curated data sets. And then on the SQL Azure side, we have the database itself, and then the new forthcoming reporting and data sync services as well, which you can think of as higher level services that work with the database. So what are the benefits? Let's try and sum up the sort of main benefits of SQL Azure and this higher level platform as a service. So some of them definitely center around, you know, ease of provisioning and deployment. It's very quick and easy to create, you know, one database in your local region, 10 databases in your region, or 100 databases on the other side of the world. Create those, remove them, pay for the capabilities that you need at that point in time. High availability, again, another great example of what we provide as this high-level platform. You don't have to worry about that keeping your database highly available. We do that for you as part of the platform. And then, as I said, you know, the Windows Azure platform, we have data centers scattered around the world. So a lot of people are wanting to use the platform to get their applications and their data close to their users around the world. And you can very easily do that with the Windows Azure platform. So I think, you know, another main area is around scale and, you know, in particular, scale out. I think sort of the cloud platform and SQL Azure in particular really opens up new opportunities for, you know, large amount of scale out and huge applications, huge data sets. And then also, you know, with that, paying for what you use. You know, maybe you have peaks and troughs, and we'll have a look at this a little later. I've got a little case study where you can pay for what you use. Maybe you have a peak, you can get more capacity, you pay for that. Then when you don't need it, you can simply remove it, and you're not going to pay for that capacity anymore. Very, very flexible. And then a big benefit, we think, and something we sort of really try hard to do, is to allow you to use the same skills, the same tools, the same applications with the cloud as you used to with your on-premises SQL Server. So we'll see that coming up shortly. So one particular area of interest, and I mentioned it, was high availability. And so I thought I'd dig in and give you just a little bit of a background on how we achieve that high availability. So for those of you who've actually used SQL Azure connected to it, it looks like you give a server name, and it's a slightly different server name as we'll see, but you're just connecting to a server, and you've got this database. Just looks like a regular database. Really, what that is, it's a logical database. And really what that does is it forwards requests on to one of a number of replicas that are sitting there in our data center behind the scenes. So behind the scenes, your data is sitting on at least three separate copies of your data, sitting on three separate machines. So let's say, for example, I insert a row. So there's a concept of a primary replica. So that row is going to get inserted on that primary replica. And then to ensure that it's highly available, and if anything happens to that replica, you're not going to lose the data, we'll wait for that transaction to commit until it's committed on one of the other replicas there. So maybe that commits on replica 2 first. And then once it's committed on a quorum, 2 out of 3, then your transaction will return and your data's safe. And then in the background, it's going to commit on the other replicas that are there. So then when you read, the latest copy is always going to be available on the primary. So the reads are always from that primary. So then if there is a problem, let's say there's a problem with that primary replica, then what's going to happen is that logical database, the underlying infrastructure that we have, fabric, we call it, the underlying fabric is going to know, okay, this primary replica is now no longer available, and very quickly switch over the logical database to, say, replica 2. So, you might get a drop connection or a connection invalidated, but as soon as you get the next connection, within a matter of seconds, you get a new connection, and you'll be connected, say, to replica 2. And you'll have replica 2 and replica 3. And then in the background, as quickly as we can, we fire up effectively another database behind the scenes and get you back up to that same number of copies that we had before. And all that's sort of handled by our underlying available infrastructure. So security often is a hot topic of conversation when it comes to the cloud. And in terms of the security model, I'm sure you're all familiar with SQL Auth, and that's the model that we provide with SQL Azure. But often when you're connecting to the database, you're not connecting from private network, your corporate network, for example. You're connecting across the internet to our data centers or across the world. So we go to great lengths to encrypt the communication there, so that all the traffic between your client and the database is encrypted and is secure. And then also what we'll see when we have a look at the administration experience, we have a concept of a firewall. So you can actually lock down the database and say, look, I'm only going to accept requests from this particular client or these particular clients or my application running in Windows Azure and not going to accept anything from actually even outside of Windows Azure. So we'll have a look at the firewall configuration in a few minutes. Here we go. So let's start off. I'm going to cover development a little later, and let's start off with administration and the administration experience. So the starting point is the Windows Azure portal. And so for anyone that maybe haven't even used SQL Azure but have signed up for the Windows Azure platform, one of the offers there, and if you used it, your starting point is the portal. This provides you the overview of all your Windows Azure platform services that you're using or are available. So we can see here, a bunch of common tasks here and how to get started, and a lot of help trying to make it as easy to use as possible. And then we have a number of effectively tabs here or pages that we can select. So for example, here's my Windows Azure services that we're going to run, and one of them we're going to see, we'll see later on, because it's using SQL Azure. That's a light switch application I deployed earlier. And then we can see here we've got our database tab. So on the database page, we can see I can link off, I can create a new subscription, I can create a new server, create a new database, and so on. But here, if we go on the left-hand side, we can take a look at what I've already created. So with my account, with my Windows Azure account, I have a number of subscriptions. And those subscriptions are tied to a set of services in a particular region of the world. And I've got two subscriptions here. One European subscription, one in the US. And with each subscription, I can have a number of servers. So here in Europe, I've got this server here. You can see the region is North Europe and my admin logon. In the US, I have one server as well, and that's in the North Central US data center. Oops. And then associated with the server, we can see here I have the databases. So I can see all the databases that I have associated with that server. So within here, I can do a basic administration tasks. I've seen information here about the server itself. For example, the fully qualified domain name here. I've got basic information about the database, the space used, and so on. And then within this experience as well, I can actually create a database, for example. So I can create a demo database here. SQL Azure has two SKUs, web and business. I could select business, for example. Select a maximum database size, say 30 gigs. Click OK, and then now that database has been created. So I can do this in the portal, and we can see later on I can have exactly the same thing in Management Studio if I want. But some of these sort of higher level capabilities are available in the one place within the portal. If I select a database here as well and select Manage at the top here, you can also see I have some basic management capabilities. If you like, you know, part of the capabilities of SQL Server Management Studio, but in the cloud without any tools install. So I've selected the database here. It's my password. And that's going to connect to my database here. And this is effectively a Silverlight site that provides a basic management experience for me. So I can see my tables, views, stored procedures, and so on. I could select the table. It comes up in design view, see the column types and so on, add a column. I can click on data and actually see the data as well. So I can create new row, delete row, and so on. You can even open a query here and issue a query. So within the portal and with just a web experience, I can do a lot of things here in terms of provisioning databases, removing databases, you know, and basic management capabilities, you know, all from the web or without installing any software. Let's log out. But I'm sure a lot of you, from the you're used to SQL Server on-premises, you know and maybe love Management Studio. You spend a lot of your time in Management Studio. So what's the support like in Management Studio for SQL Azure? Well, it's basically the same as on-premises. I can connect, select the database engine. I actually have pre-selected here my server name. I'm using SQL Auth, and connect, and I get my databases here. So exactly what we saw on the portal and the web experience there, I have available here in Management Studio, exactly the same as a local database. Let me also connect here to, I've got my other server, which was in the US. I'll connect to that. So we can see here, now I have effectively a server in Europe. I've got a server in the US, and I can access them, you know, exactly the same way. I've got the database there, database here. I can view the tables and do all exactly the same pretty much exactly the same things as I can do with my local SQL server, but with SQL Azure. All right, so that's the management experience and administration experience for SQL Azure. So hopefully you can see, so there's some web-based stuff, allow you to access it without any tools. But then, you know, a lot of people are used to using Management Studio, using the standard tools, and you can still use those and basically get the same experience and leverage the same skills you already have. So one thing I wanted to point out, because I think, you know, it's easy to miss this, and it is different from what you're used to in the on-premises world. So when we went through the administration experience there, I had a number of servers, and then obviously those servers had a number of databases. But one thing I wanted to clarify was that, let's say you have an application and we've got 20 gigs or up to 20 gigs of data. Well, you might think, you know, so the best way to do that is to, I can get my database, one 20 gig database. And that effectively equates to a server or certainly part of a server in the cloud for a certain amount of CPU and IOs. And then, you know, that up to 20 gigabytes of space, storage space. But let's say my I can partition out my data and I've got a higher load. What I can actually do is if I split that and I can partition that data, let's say across four separate databases, what you're actually going to get is effectively four servers and the compute associated with four servers, as well as, you know, the 4 times 5 gigabytes of disk space. So if you can partition your data, you're going to get, you know, the same amount of space, but you're going to be able to handle much more load, 4 times the load, than you could with one 20 gigabyte database. So I think that's something that, you know, it's easy to overlook because you think we have the concept of a server and a database, but the, you know, effectively the CPU or the computing power that you have and the IOs that you have in the cloud is actually really associated with the database and each individual database. And really the server concept, it's more of a logical concept and a way to group databases and store information about the databases. So I just thought I'd highlight that because I think that's easy to miss and it is an important property. And it is an important way that you can actually scale out your SQL Azure applications. So while we're talking about scale, I think I wanted to bring up this example because I think this is just a fantastic example and a fantastic workload sort of to highlight the flexibility of, you know, using the cloud and using SQL Azure. So I think, as I mentioned earlier, you know, you have the ability to create the databases, remove the databases, you know, as you need to, and you're only going to pay for the databases and what you actually use for that period of time. So Ticket Direct was one of our first customers when we V1 of the platform that really bought in and used it and took great advantage of this platform. So they're a ticket vendor, obviously from the name, but you know these ticket companies have you know maybe periods of quiet, there isn't much happening, not many large events, and then they'll get some super large event happening, and you get everyone, you know, 10 times, 20 times the traffic on their site, trying to hit the database, looking at the event, trying to book tickets and so on there. So what Ticket Direct and other people do with similar workloads is they, when they've got an event like this coming up or a particular time of the year coming up, for example, with you know, e-tailing, for example, you know, they're going to provision more capacity. They're going to provision more compute in Windows Azure. They're going to create more databases to handle the load with SQL Azure. They're then able to handle that load, that peak load. And then after the event or after all the tickets are sold, then simply they remove the databases and the computing instances that they were using, and then they don't pay for them anymore. And I think just it's a fantastic example of the flexibility of the cloud and the sort of workload that can really take advantage of that flexibility and pay for use. So when we look at application development, really, I think, you know, one of our main goals with SQL Azure has been to keep, you know, the same experience, allow you to use the same tools, allow you to use the same skills that you already have. So, you know, that really extends from, you know, the connectivity using, you know, whatever client access libraries you want with ADO or ODBC or PHP even. You know, the same frameworks with the entity framework, ASP.NET and so on there. T-SQL is pretty much the same. There's some, definitely some differences there, especially because, you know, there's no more physical administration that you have to do. But basically, T-SQL is the same. A lot of the T-SQL that you have, most of it, would be able to work with SQL Azure. And then we had a look at some of the tools. We saw Management Studio, whether it's SQL Command or BCP, some of the other SQL Server high-level capabilities, integration services, reporting, and so on, all can work with SQL Azure as if it's a, you know, SQL Server database. And then we'll see actually in a little bit, you know, Lightswitch and Visual Studio, as well as then Excel and PowerPivot, all can use SQL Azure just like SQL Server. And you know, reuse all these tools and skills that you're used to today with your on-premises database. So there are some T-SQL differences, as I mentioned, mainly around the fact that, you know, you've got no more physical administration. You know, you don't choose, for example, on what disk your database goes, for example, or what disk the index goes. That's all abstracted away from you. You don't worry about that anymore. There are some features that aren't available yet, like agent or linked queries. But really, as I said at the beginning, you know, really looking to upgrade and are upgrading the system almost like every few months. And these will come online over the next year or so. And then the last thing I want to mention, this is probably the thing that you know, probably catches most people out, is around connection handling. So even for an on-premises application, today, in theory at least, you're issuing your queries and you know, you're looking at your connection and you're handling and retrying if the connection goes away. But obviously, it doesn't go away that often, and actually a lot of people don't even handle that case very well. But with the cloud, that can happen. It can happen and happen a little more often. So, you know, one of the things that you definitely recommend is to look at, you know, your connection handling and be able to retry if your sort of connection becomes invalid. And I think we've actually got some great samples and patterns and practices up on the web that show you effectively how to do that and how to actually monitor how often it happens and so on. So one of the reasons that your connections could go away, and it doesn't happen that often. It's actually something that we've got much, much better at and happens far less frequently now with the latest updates. But it's down to throttling. So with SQL Azure, you know, you're getting a database and you're getting a certain amount of compute there, but you're sharing that. You're sharing that server, you're sharing the disks with other users. It's a shared environment. So obviously, you know, we do a pretty good job of keeping everyone separate there, but there could be cases where someone, obviously not you, obviously, but someone, you know, has a bad query, does something that could really impact the rest of the people and the rest of the tenants on that server. So we've put a lot of thought and effort into this sort of throttling, so that if anything like that looks like it's about to happen or starts to happen, then that bad query, for example, will get killed off so that, you know, the rest of the tenants, their experience isn't impacted. So then there's a number of things. I won't go through these in detail, but there's a number of things that could actually cause this throttling to happen, whether it's excessive use of locks, transactions that go on for a long, long time, memory usage, and so on. So something to be aware of. It is a shared environment, and this and throttling is one thing that could lead to those connections getting dropped. Obviously, if you do get throttled, your connection get dropped, you don't lose any data. I mean, your transactions simply won't commit. You can try again, and if it was a transient thing, for example, or you correct the query, you get a connection, and it'll work the next time. So with SQL Azure, and this is, I mean, it's pretty much the same as well with your on-premises applications. There are different ways to architect those applications, you know, two-tier or n-tier applications. And the same really applies with SQL Azure. But I think the effects or the differences between the different architectures become a little more pronounced in the cloud. So if you've got a simple two-tier application, for example, and I'll show one in a second, or you could use, for example, Management Studio is an example of this. You've got a local client application, and it's talking directly to your SQL Azure database. You know, there's nothing in the middle. It's just literally talking directly to it. In that case, you know, you've got your code. It's executing locally. Like in that case, when I was showing Management Studio, it's running on my machine here, but connecting code far, we call it, connecting to SQL Azure, whether that's somewhere in Europe or somewhere in the US or somewhere in Asia. But you can still write two-tier applications, you know, with SQL Azure and with the cloud. You know, obviously what you've got to be a little wary of, though, is, you know, you've got probably got more restrictive bandwidth than you do internally, and you've probably got higher latency as well than you would internally. But, you know, you still can write, and, you know, Management Studio is an example of a two-tier application working with SQL Azure. But then you've got, maybe your more standard three-tier application. So you can have an application that you deploy that out to Windows Azure. You'll create an instance and deploy it to Windows Azure, and that, in turn, will then connect to and talk to SQL Azure. So in that case, you know, you've got the code, especially if you use the same data center. You can deploy your application to a Windows Azure data center. You deploy your database to the same data center, and then your application and the data are very, very close together, working on an extremely high-speed internal network within our data center. And, you know, you probably get the best experience that way. Certainly if you're doing, you know, large queries of large amounts of data, and then filtering that down or exposing it in a browser application, for example. And then you can, as with a lot of things, you can combine things and have a combination of a hybrid approach, a combination of sort of two-tier or three-tier, or sort of specifically here, you could have applications that are still maybe working against a local SQL server that's synchronizing up against SQL Azure, and then you either have a two-tier or three-tier application maybe elsewhere that's working with the cloud. So there's sort of like a hybrid approach as well. So let's start and go through a few examples of developing applications with SQL Azure. So I thought I'd start off very, very simply just to show you, if you like, the symmetry. And this is a very simple, I think actually I got this from, there's an MSDN sample in the SQL Azure section of MSDN, simply to show that you, how you can simply use ADO.NET with SQL Azure. So here's an example of a very simple two-tier application. Going to run on my laptop here, talking to a SQL Azure database sitting in Europe, European data center. So we can see here, simply building up a connection, and probably pretty much the main difference here is the format of the server name. This is the server name associated with that logical server I'm going to connect to. And sorry, I hit run there. It's gone through, and the command I ran was simply select the product number and name from product, and then display that out on the command line. So extremely simple. Oops, where did that one go? Wrong window. There it is. Sorry. There. So extremely simple application, simply going out onto the internet, European data center, querying the data in a two-tier fashion. Let's move quickly on to ASP.NET. And what I thought I'd do here was, so this is, again, very simple. You can see literally this is the boilerplate and the standard ASP.NET template here. But it's a Windows Azure application. So this is sort of the Windows Azure experience, and I'm going to run this application, if you like, in the local Windows Azure development environment. So standard, you know, just default.asp. But the difference here is, so I've just got to put a simple grid view on here with a SQL Azure data source. Get the connection, as you, pretty much as we saw earlier on, to that same, exactly the same server and issue exactly the same query. So I thought I'd just show this because, first of all, it just shows, again, the fact ASP.NET, it's just going to work with SQL Azure. And then the fact that this is a Windows Azure application. I can develop an application. In this case, I'm going to just run it in the local development fabric and not deploy it to the cloud. So in reality, if I don't deploy this, I suppose it's an N-tier application, but obviously the code's running here locally and the database is still up in the cloud. So we'll see here, this is pulling all the products. The network was a little slow earlier on, so we'll see if this comes back. Maybe not. Ah, there we go. Network. Let's try again. There we go. Okay, at least it comes back pretty quick. So here we go. So it's just the standard ASP.NET page, and here's all the product data in a grid. Very, very simple. So next up, what I thought it would be fun to show you is effectively a new Visual Studio tool that's in beta 2 at the moment. Sure. And actually, it was anyone that was here for the previous session, it was a session on light switch. So what I thought I'd do is show you developing a very, very simple but light switch application. Because light switch, it's a brand new application, Visual Studio application, making it very easy to build data-driven applications, and it very specifically has great support in it for the Windows Azure platform and for SQL Azure. So I already had, obviously, Visual Studio, so it just integrates into Visual Studio. I get, effectively, a light switch set of templates. I can develop in C#, although, as you'll see, actually, we won't even see any code. So what LightSwitch does, it's great. It sort of guides you through an experience, and certainly for very, very simple data-driven applications, you might not even have to write any code. It'll just sort of guide you through the experience, and whether that's an application that you're going to run on-premises or an application you want to deploy to the cloud. So it starts off, it's all about data-driven applications. It's going to start off with asking me about the data. Do you want to create a new source of data or connect to an existing source? So I'll use the database that I've been using to this point. Select database here. You can see the other data sources. I need a server name, so let me go here. I'll just copy that. That's my server name. Use SQL Auth. Save the password, and if that's got that correct, now I see my databases. Connection should be good, and OK that. So now we'll see again what the network's like, but now it's going out to the database there and querying the tables, the views, and so on, the things that I might want to expose or utilize in my application. So I've got the tables here, I've got the list of tables. I'll simply select the products table again, hit finish. So that, again, has pulled basically the metadata for the table. It knows all the columns, knows the types, whether they're required or not, and gives me a chance here. I think one of the cool things for LightSwitch is, I haven't got a particularly good example here, but if I just pick a string, for example, you can say, well, this is a string, but it's an email address, or this is a string, but it's a phone number, and it sort of builds in extra validation and formatting for you, so you don't have to come up with that stuff. I'll just keep it as a string. So I've got my data. This is my data source, my one product table. I'll create a screen, some UI. So you can have, obviously, multiple screens and link them together. I'm just going to have the one screen, and there's one here. They provide a whole bunch of templates. One of them is the list and then the details screen. So I'm going to select that. Select that data, that products table that I just defined. Hit OK. So now we come into sort of this designer experience. It's taken that template, which sort of consists of two sides. It's give me a list of the effectively the products, and then on the other side of the screen there's going to be the details. So we can see I have two lists here. I've got my list of products with one column, the product itself. And then I've got the what appears in the details. So in the details, for example, let me just remove these. These aren't relevant. And then the other thing that I want to do is let's just have a read-only experience, a browse experience. So you can see, for example, it changed those text boxes to labels. And the same here. I'll just use read-only. So that's it. Let's run that. I should have a runnable application now that lets me browse my product SQL Azure database. Succeeded. So this is the first screen. We can see the screen I defined here, product list detail. I can obviously have multiple screens. And it's going away and getting the information. So again, we'll see if there's how the network cooperates here. Looks like if it takes this long, it was doing this earlier on, it'll fail, but hopefully I'll just be able to refresh it and it'll all come in. So this isn't in the browser. We can actually, I'll show you a little later. LightSwitch is very flexible. You can choose to effectively write and deploy effectively Windows applications or browser-based applications in Silverlight. Oh, there we go. So that failed, but let's try again. There we go. So we can see here I've got all my products and then the product details on the right-hand side. So yeah, it lets me effectively write my effectively Windows applications, or I can have those applications as Silverlight applications and deploy them to IIS. And then you get all the benefits of a Silverlight application and being able to update it and so on. But then, you know, one of the reasons why I wanted to show you LightSwitch was, you know, the great support it has for the cloud and the cloud in Windows Azure platform in general. So for example here, so when I come to publish my application, I can choose desktop or web. And when I go to the application server configuration, I can select Windows Azure. So then once I've done that, I get a whole bunch of information I can go through here about deploying this application up to the cloud. And it sort of just guides me through the process and hit the publish at the end, and it'll all get deployed up to the cloud for you. So rather than go through that, it can take a few minutes to do that. I did just to show you what that looks like at the end. I deployed one earlier on. I went through exactly that same publish experience, went through the wizard, hit publish. A few minutes later, it's deployed into Windows Azure. And we'll see here. So this is running now in the browser. There we go. So it's running in the browser, but querying that same, it's that the code's running in Windows Azure, talking to exactly the same SQL Azure database that I've been using so far. So you can see that here. So finally, what I thought would be good to look at is taking our data that's in SQL Azure and in the cloud and exposing it via OData. Let me just start that. So before I go on, Are you guys familiar with OData? Who knows what OData is or has looked at it to any great extent? So actually, only a few of you. So let me give an overview of OData as we go. But what OData is, I mean, really sort of the main value of OData, which is a protocol, and you can go to odata.org and find out more about it. It's an open HTTP-based web protocol for accessing data, for querying data and updating data. So, you know, because it's web-based, it's a REST protocol based on HTTP, it can be easily consumed and easily utilized by any client out there. You know, you've really got the, you know, complete flexibility on the client, and it's very easy for any client to consume that data. You're not, you know, you don't have to use ODBC or specific platform-specific libraries. It's a, you know, web-based protocol. So I've got my default ASP here. The first thing I need to do is define my data that I want to expose, and I'm going to do that with a. I need to do that with a entity data model here. I'll just call it AW for AdventureWorks. Generate that from the database. So I already have my connection to that exact same database that we've been using. I need to copy this for later. So similar to LightSwitch, it's going to go away, have a look at that database, see what tables there are, and views there are, really define the model. I'm going to do exactly the same model, put it on top of product. So now I've got my model defined, so we can see. I mean, it's just a simple one-on-one on top of the product table here. The next thing I need to do, now I've got my model, is actually expose the protocol so that people can use it, and do that via a WCF data service. So if I add a new item here again, web. You can see here, WCF data service, and add that. So once we've defined the model, we've defined, look, this is the data that we want to expose. We then need a service to expose that, to create an endpoint out there on the web for us so that these clients can access the protocol, and it exposes the protocol, can accept requests for queries, updates, and so on. So when I add in a new WCF data service, you can see here it just provides some very small amount of boilerplate code. And I just have to put I copied that for a reason earlier on. I just paste that in here. These are the entities, or the entity in my case, that I defined and want to expose. And then by default, obviously, it locks everything down. You can't get it at anything. So I need to enable that. So I'm going to expose my products entity there and hit run. So as well as sort of going through and say, hey, you know, we've got this WCF data services that works great with SQL Azure, this is exposing data with OData is something that we've seen a lot of interest on. And I think it's sort of one of the more unique capabilities of cloud services. And that, you know, you've got a service there up in the cloud, you've deployed and data up in the cloud, and it makes it very easy for clients to connect to it. So, and in particular, we, you know, with the explosion of tablets and devices and so on, you know, I think there's a great advantage to basically deploy your applications to the cloud, expose your data in the cloud, and make it really easy for these clients to access it. And then OData itself is great because it's just a truly open protocol that could be accessed by any client. In fact, if you go to odata.org, they've got a whole bunch of, as well as obviously pointing you at data services for the server-side implementation, there's a whole bunch of client libraries for whether it's Silverlight, Windows Phone 7, Windows, but also iPhone, I think they've got Android. And then HTML5 as well. This protocol is consumable by JavaScript from HTML5 clients. So you know, you truly have, you know, a set of varying set of clients accessing your data from the cloud. So we've just hit access the service here, and by default, the service will just publish and say, hey, here's what I've got available for you. Here's the data that's available. And we can see that I've just got the URL here in the browser. It's returned this in atom format. There's actually got multiple formats this can be returned in. Atom or JSON is the other format. And what I can do here, so it's saying, hey, there's a products collection. Oops. So I can select products, and I'm going to, seeing as my last two things have timed out, I'll restrict it. It provides gives you a good example of you can provide a set of parameters here. So I want to have a look at products, but just return me the top 10 or the first 10. Did I get that right? Ah, I didn't. $10. Oops. Let's see. Did that go through? Spinning a lot. Sorry? Oh, did I forget the products there? Ah, yeah. We'll see. Maybe I'll stop it and restart it. Chug, chug, chug. Okay, let's try again. There we go. I'm trying to type this. So, products, top equals 10. Ah, there we go. Okay. So that's gone to the products collection. It would have listed all the products, but it's just simply returned the top 10. And we can see here that if we go down into this XML, we can see, hey, for each product, here's the equivalent of the columns that I expose with my model, and the data types and the actual values. So, for example, here's the product ID, 680, the primary key, and so on here. So I just as I did top 10 here, I can say, for example, just specify the primary key, 680, and just query for that primary key. So you can see here, basically, because it's a REST-based protocol, I can effectively issue queries, and I can actually issue updates and so on by actually typing in URLs, and the URLs I submit. And I can filter, I can do aggregations, and so on here, all from literally just issuing query in the browser and getting the data back. And then because this data here is in, using its web standards, Atom and JSON, it can be consumed by any client. So hopefully with that, we've sort of seen that things like WCF data services can be used with SQL Azure, just as with on-premises SQL Server. And I think OData is just really a great fit and a great way to expose data from the cloud and a great use for the cloud. So let's look forward a little. What we've had a look at is the database, SQL Azure database. And it's been around about a year and a half now. And we've been hard at work, as well as doing updates for the database. We're hard at work currently producing the final versions for reporting and data sync. Both of these services are going to be out later on this year. And both of them are actually currently in CTP. So reporting, it's just all about, again, bringing some of those same capabilities that you have with reporting services on-premises and bringing it up to the cloud, available in the cloud, as a service. Have the same great visualizations, the charting, the graphs, and so on. You can utilize the same skills that you already have and the same tools with BI Dev Studio. But instead of obviously uploading your report file to your on-premises reporting services, you have a URL and you upload it to the reporting, the instance of reporting that you've got. So you've got the same main scenarios it supports in terms of I can browse to a report, get a URL for a report, and have a report rendered in the browser. You can also take reports as well and embed them in your applications with the report controls that are out there. So both those capabilities are going to be available and actually are available now with the CTP of SQL Azure reporting. Now, SQL Azure Data Sync, this is something close to my heart because it's what my team's currently working on, really is going to focus on two main scenarios initially. And one of them, and probably the most common one to start with, given where we are with the cloud and the move to the cloud, is that for synchronizing your on-premises data up to the cloud, up to SQL Server. So what we found is that a lot of people have have an on-premises database, have your on-premises applications, and they're going to stay there, certainly for the moment, but they really want to start developing for the cloud and maybe are developing new applications, deploying them to the cloud and really leveraging some of the cloud benefits that exist. But the problem is that they need both of these applications in both worlds to operate on the same data. So one of the main capabilities that we're providing with SQL Azure Data Sync is that ability to share data between your on-premises SQL Server and the cloud and SQL Azure. Really link those together and allow them to share data. Also then, another use that people have once data's up in the cloud is they really want to leverage these data centers that I've talked about. We have data centers around the world, and no matter almost like how good the backbones of the internet get and so on, people and the users, they're always going to get the best experience when the applications and when the data is close to them. So what the sort of other main capability of SQL Azure allows you to do is take that data and create multiple copies, either around the world or potentially even in the same data center for scale out reasons. So sort of those two main things, geo-replication and scale-out. And one of the great uses of it for scale-out is for reporting. You might want to have your main application workload on one database and then multiple copies of the database, perhaps with different indexing scheme, for example, that your reporting workload is going to hit. And SQL Azure Data Sync will allow you to do that. So both of these things, both these services, they're coming along. They're in CTP, both of them in CTP 2 now, and will be available later this year. So as I said earlier, we're constantly working on updated versions of these cloud services. We can roll out new versions every few months, and we'll be rolling out new versions every few months. So there's a number of main themes that we're working on and main areas that we're investing in over the next year, and I just wanted to give you an overview of that in those areas. So first of all, there's what we could call the sort of enterprise readiness and some of the sort of basic capabilities to handle the fact that sometimes we can make mistakes and delete data that we don't mean to delete and cater for either application or user errors. So we've got point-in-time restore is coming online pretty shortly. Then we've got the case of geographically effectively backing up your databases around the world to cater for more of your disaster scenarios and maybe a data center becoming unavailable. So geo backup, again, one of those features that we're going to get in the next few months, actually. Migration of applications is something that, again, we're working on, making it as easy as possible to take applications that you have either on a Microsoft platform or in a Microsoft store or in another store and bring them and take them to the cloud. So we're investing in import and export capabilities, making it easy to get data into the cloud, into SQL Azure, or to migrate existing applications from on-premises into the cloud. And then doing more around the management and the portal experience. Scale out. Earlier on, I showed you the model of either one 20 gig database or 4 or 5 gig databases. A lot of people want to utilize the cloud and the ability to create hundreds or thousands of these databases and have huge amounts of data in the cloud and have huge amount of scale and number of people accessing that data. So we've got something called federations that's coming online shortly that will really sort of help you partition out or scale out your databases so that you can have huge data sets and split that across. It could be tens of databases, hundreds, or even thousands of databases. Partition the data out across all those databases and help you, manage that partitioning and give you that huge scale in terms of, you know, the data storage and amount of traffic that that application can handle. You need to design for scale out and design for that partitioning. Also, what we're doing is when you just want to deal with the one database and keep the same familiar model that you're used to today, we're going to give you a lot more flexibility around your database sizes. So, for example, you know, we're going to allow you to have databases larger than the 50 gigs. That's the maximum now with SQL Azure. But also, we're getting people that ask us for larger databases. Then we're getting people that want to use the cloud maybe for their port their access applications and access data to the cloud. And they're saying, well, 1 gigabyte's too much here and too expensive for us. We'd rather have lots of smaller databases. So we want to sort of cater for that end of the spectrum as well. A number of people also are asking about, you know, look, hey, I'm getting a slice of this server here, and I really want to be guaranteed to get more of, if you like, of the compute, more of the I/O capability, because I've got more traffic on my application, and have that independent of the database storage. So what we're working on is allowing you to effectively reserve and have a minimum SLA around the minimum amount of, or the smallest amount of compute that you have. So you'll be able to pay for effectively, you know, fractions of cores as we move forward, have more control over that and more predictability. And then finally, we actually went through the reporting, providing more insight into your data, having your application span across different databases between the cloud and on-premises with DataSync, investing heavily in those today. And then some of the tooling as well, the developer experiences. I showed you LightSwitch, which is currently in beta 2. That's coming online. Very specific support for SQL Azure. But also Visual Studio Juno coming online. You know, great, really making database development a first-class experience inside Visual Studio. And that, again, has very specific support for SQL Azure. You know, as well as some other investments in the portal and JDBC drivers and so on there. So I thought I'd finish up with some references. Here you go for some more information. The blog, how to get a free trial. There's even a feature voting there. I don't know how many of you have used the feature voting, but a lot of the products at Microsoft now, we have these feature voting sites, and you can go and see, is the feature request that you want there? And if it is, you can vote on it. Or if it isn't, you can create it and allow other people to vote on it. And we in the product groups, we look at that a lot and seeing what the community's asking for. And then there's, you know, the MSDN library and the forum for support. And then I've got my email there. If anyone wants access to the CTP's reporting services or DataSync, feel free to email me, and I can give you access. So with that, thank you very much. Hope you enjoyed that. Hope it gave you a good overview of SQL Azure, and I'd be happy to take questions. Thank you. Any questions?